is Thursday, and Felix Spinell is here, who's usually here on Wednesday, but he got preempted by this election stuff. So here he is with the tale of a close election and a prolonged series of recounts that lasted until late December. Yes, we're going back to the 2004 governor's race right here in the Evergreen State, and Felix was brought to us by the King County Library System.
Yeah, so exactly 16 years ago, it was quite the dramatic post-election for Democrat Christine Gregoire, who was then Attorney General, and Republican State Senator Dino Rossi. They were running for governor to succeed Gary Locke. The race was much closer than anybody expected. Washington hadn't elected a Republican governor since John Spellman in 1980. So practically no one expected Christine Gregoire to have any difficulty defeating Dino Rossi. Now, I spoke with each of them recently to get their recollections and reflections, and we'll hear from them in a moment. But first, sort of the quick timeline, and write this down so you can follow along. Election night 2004, Gregoire led by about 7,000 votes, hundreds of thousands of absentees still to be counted. The total was about 3 million ballots altogether. By November 9th, Rossi was up by more than 2,000 votes, and a legal battle was heating up about counting more provisional ballots. By November 17th, Rossi's lead had narrowed to 261 votes, and that triggered a machine recount. After the machine recount, Rossi was ahead by just 42 votes and was declared governor-elect. But December 8th, a hand recount began, and the legal battle intensified over more ballots that could be counted or recounted in some cases. December 23rd, the hand recount was done, and Gregoire had prevailed by 129 votes. She was inaugurated governor on January 12th, 2005, but the battle wasn't quite over yet. So Christine Gregoire's in her 70s now. She runs a think tank called Challenge Seattle. The memories of that 2004 election still seem pretty raw.
And then when you stop to think for yourself, I can lose this by 42 votes. And you ask yourself, wasn't there something more you could have done? Weren't there 43 hands you could have shaken? Wasn't there something you should have done? And you just start second-guessing everything you did. So it is not just some technical decision-making thing. It is a absolute roller coaster of emotion, and particularly hard on our daughters and my husband.
You know, and she was a winner, of course. And Gregoire acknowledges that for a Democrat to end up in so tight a finish in a governor's race in Washington in 2004 was something that didn't need to happen.
I think our campaign could have been better. I want to take responsibility right off for that. And I think there was an appetite for a change because we had had a Democratic governor for so many years. I think there, and because of that, I think there was complacency, quite frankly, with a number of folks in my party who thought it's pretty guaranteed, so not to worry.
Now, Dino Rossi, who's a commercial real estate investor and in his 60s, is pretty matter-of-fact about what he believes happened in 2004. Now, he won't say it in so many words, but I'd say he thinks the election was essentially stolen by the Democrats.
You have every lever. You have the Democrat-appointed judges for 30 years. You have a sloppy system in King County that can be exploited. You have no one really looking over their shoulder because no one really thought, well, that kind of thing doesn't happen here in Washington State. It's kind of what we thought. And we were ignorant at the time. And as to, how these things are done. And, you have to, obviously you do have to win by a bigger margin. But, running 8 points ahead of the president was about all we could do.
Yeah, both candidates say that, and I asked them both, like, couldn't you just run a better race? And Rossi mentioned he did do 8 points better than George W. Bush, and that's pretty good. You might remember back in the 60s and 70s, and maybe even earlier than this, Washington would often split the ticket. We'd have a Democratic president would win here, but we'd have a Republican governor or Democratic senators in the same election. It was just sort of how Washington rolled. And we still roll that way. We still have statewide people like the Secretary of State, yeah, Kim Wyman's Republican, right? And so maybe 2004 was like this, just this little spot in time that was almost a throwback to those years. Now, Chris Gregoire rejects the notion of that 2004 election having been stolen.
Whatever happened by human error, not by intention, not by anything corrupt or wrong. I just fundamentally disagree. But I can understand if I was on the losing end at the end of the day, how hurt I'd feel and angry I'd feel.
And while she was inaugurated in January 2005, the legal battle continued until June 2005. That's when a judge in Chelan County rejected the Republican request to set aside the election and redo it. So for the first, what, was that four or five months of her administration, there was sort of this cloud hanging over the fact that it could be set aside at any point. The judge in Wenatchee said, nah, kind of threw out that challenge. And Rossi decided to not pursue it any further based on the Supreme, the political makeup of the Supreme Court. Now, Rossi came back. He challenged Gregoire for governor again in 2008, but it wasn't 2004 anymore, that magical moment. He lost by about 6 points with no recounts or delays. He then challenged Patty Murray for the Senate, the U.S. Senate in 2010 and lost. And he lost to Kim Schreier in a race for the 8th District U.S. House seat in 2018. So, again, there must have been something about 2004 where just so many things lined up. Talking to both of them 16 years later, it's clear they were both put through the ringer, you know, being the candidates in that election. Still, Dino Rossi says he has no hard feelings toward Christine Gregoire for denying him that statewide victory he came so close to in 2004.
Yeah, we've been at events and fundraisers together. And, you know, I had no animosity towards her. Never did. You know, I just thought I could do a better job.
And, you know, you might remember that Rossi's campaign ads for one of those elections, I don't think it was the 2004 race, but it played up his hard scrabble early life, including working the night shift, polishing the floors of the Space Needle. So we spent a lot of time talking about that. And as a historian, I had to ask Dino Rossi one more probing question.
Did you ever sneak anyone up into the Space Needle with you just to show them the view and stuff?
Well, I'm not going to answer that.
Okay, well, I think you just did.
That sounds like you opened some old wounds there.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the joy of being a historian is you have permission to call people up and ask them about really tough, challenging times. And credit to both of them, especially Dino Rossi, for being willing to talk about it. Because, I mean, weren't you involved in that 2004 election in some way?
Yeah, a little bit. As a matter of fact, I take the blame for it because you had on that same ballot in the 8th District, you had Dino Rossi, Dave Ross, Dave Reichert. And there were a lot of people who wanted to make darn sure that nobody named Ross with Ross in his name was going to get into a position of authority. And so they just, you know, looked for every Ross and voted no.
Wow. So, that's sorry for opening those old wounds, Dave.
I'm sorry.
You know, and there's so many reforms have been put in place. So much of the sloppiness that you mentioned about King County, that has been cleaned up. So I think the elections are much more secure than they were 16 years ago. But here we are, history not quite repeating itself, but elections are always paid attention to. Yep.
Thank you, Philip. What is your name? Felix.
You can call me Felix Dave. Bunnell. You can call me Philip. You can call me Flip. Whatever you want, Dave.
Must have been that earthquake. Felix.
Just mark your
us.
Ballot color correctly, okay? Don't vote for Philip. Vote for Felix.
Felix joins us every Wednesday, unless it's Thursday. And all his stuff is at MyNorthWest.com any day of the week. Choke points. What's the difference between a heavy congestion day and an easy day on the roads with so many people still working from home? Here is Chris with a look at the new numbers.
Yeah, it really comes down to just a couple of thousand cars on the road each day. Before COVID, we used to say that a 10-15% reduction on the roads like we would see on federal holidays would really turn our roads into a breeze. And that's really what we are seeing right now. It really doesn't take a huge amount of cars to make a big difference in our travel times. The Monday after the stay-at-home order in March, the major freeways around the state saw a reduction in travel by nearly 50%, and it's been slowly recovering. And in fact, last Thursday, for some reason, we experienced our heaviest commuting day when the reduction across the state was just 8% over the same day last year. So I don't know what everybody was doing last Thursday, but you were out and about. In fact, I-5 in Lakewood, just off 1% that day. 167 in Kent, just 6%. And I-5 in Everett was down 4%. Does this show we're back to normal? No. But it does show that on any given day, our traffic volumes can come close to what we used to see, and that can make the difference between a heavy day and a breeze. For example, yesterday we were back to 19% reduction in travel. So it really ebbs and flows. But last Thursday was the first real day we saw all of our roads consistently in single digits. The roads that are getting the most travel, 167. That corridor through the valley has been well-traveled throughout this whole COVID thing. It dropped only 35% after the lockdown, and it's been running in single digits now for 2 months. As for the ferries, seeing a little rebound, ridership dropped 70% in March. It's off about 35% now, so it's recovered about half of that. Transit, though, still taking a beating. It's down over 60% overall. So it just kind of goes to show you that there are some days where we are almost back to what we used to see. Most days, though, we are still not.
Now let's turn to Washington State. We have until December 3rd to certify the 2020 general election returns. So that technically none of the races in the state have been made final. Governor Inslee's challenger also has not conceded. So let's go live now to Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. Yeah, we had a Facebook Live event that happened yesterday with Lauren Culp. That's the Republican challenger to Governor Inslee. And before he even got into the election issues, he had made this announcement.
The city council had a special meeting, not their normally scheduled meeting, but a special meeting. And they voted to defund the police department, including my job. Incredible, right? Small-minded people playing political games. All but one council member voted to defund the police department.
So he's out of a job. That was his first announcement. And as he said on election night, after the first initial results came out, despite the more than 600,000 votes that he trails Inslee by, Culp reiterated this position.
We are not conceding. There are some irregularities in the voting, in the tabulation. And my team is looking into that. We're diving deep into the numbers. Some things are not adding up. And so we're looking into that. We're not conceding anything. Every voter counts. Every vote matters. And we are going to let the people speak and get the votes counted, all of them. Who knows how many mail-in ballots are still in the mail, who haven't been delivered, whose votes haven't been counted, right? No, we're not conceding.
Now, the governor did not appear too concerned with Culp catching up to him yesterday.
It's just that I can do math. And it is virtually impossible for my opponent to prevail with the most votes. And that has been a there's unanimity on that subject about those who can add. So this decision has been quite dramatic. This is one of the largest differences in the governor's race in state history. And the voters have spoken. There's just no question about that. So yes, we're going to count every vote. And at the end of the day, it is a mathematical certainty that my numbers will be in excess of my opponents. That's just a given.
Now, Culp didn't really offer any specifics on what irregularities he's talking about. Best I can tell, you know, election night, right after the first results came out, he seemed to question the fact that 60% of voters had approved the mandated sex education in the state. He thought that was questionable. And then there's a, kind of a complicated thing that we heard yesterday from some people in his camp that seemed to be confused about the way write-in votes are calculated and seemed to think that there was about 600,000 votes that maybe hadn't been counted yet because of somebody else's write-in campaign. But that's not the case either. So we'll see if he says any more about that.
There are, according to the Secretary of State's office, 409,826 ballots that have yet to be processed. And the margin in the governor's race is he'd need much more than that. Even if you got every single one of those votes.
Yeah, it's more, even more. It's like 600,000 votes, I think, is the difference.
It is now? Okay.
Yeah. So that doesn't appear to be likely, but that's still ongoing, and he's not ready to concede. But the governor's moving on, talking about his priorities, moving forward, you know, police reform, budget, all of those types of issues. In some of the other races, we have, it looks like Kim Wyman. Again, nothing's been officially declared, but Kim Wyman is poised to get her third term. In the congressional races, it looks to be that Jamie Herrera Butler again will keep her race or keep her seat, and Marilyn Strickland, we'll get to her here and shortly, is going to be the winner in the 10th. And there was in the Kim Schreier race, and she still has a pretty significant lead, but Jesse Jensen, her challenger, was on with Jason Rantz yesterday, and he had it all figured out by the county and how many ballots are still left to be counted. He seemed to think that he was closing the gap, and if that trend continued, that he could possibly catch Kim Schreier. So that'll be something to watch moving forward. In the state races, the big one to watch, very, very tight race, I think, is the 28th in Pierce County. That's where we have incumbent Republican Steve O'Bann facing Twana Nobles, a Democrat. Cairo 7 spoke to Twana Nobles about the significance of her potential victory yesterday.
This means we get to have increased representation in our state legislature, which is huge. It's been a decade since we've had a Black member of our state Senate, and so it's long overdue. There's so many working class community members in this district, and I think what has changed is our current senator's ability to relate to what life is like in our district for so many community members. I want the, you know, the final numbers to kind of roll in and be done with the count. But I'm also, you know, feeling very patient.
Now, Oban, I talked to him before the election. He's not conceding anything yet. And when I spoke to him ahead of the election, he knew it was going to be a close race, but it was a lot at stake.
We have been able to fight off an income tax in the legislature up to this point, and I want to continue, I think, to protect middle-class taxpayers in that way. And if we lose this seat, Ms. Nobles has already said publicly she'll support the income tax, so they'll have the votes, no question about it. So, you know, unless voters in the 20th district want an income tax, and I know they don't, I think the choice is pretty clear.
Nobles is leading in that race now by more than 2,000 votes. She's has extended her lead a little bit. So not called yet, one to watch. And
that's
then
just,
again,
just a moment. Here, do you think that was that a big issue in the election itself? Do you know, did people vote for her as a way of saying, yes, we want an income tax?
Anything is possible. I think that there's certainly some in that district, that kind of the community that she's talking about, who struggle, who are working class people, who would like to see perhaps more progressive revenue sources. And she has said that she does support a capital gains tax, but she told me that she, you know, she wants to ensure that that's just on the, you know, the most wealthy millionaires in the state, and that it's going to go and benefit those people who are the working class people. So I think that there's, again, that district has become more purple than it used to be. And she's, as she said, thinks that Oban is out of touch. Now, Oban, no, he's been fighting for the car tab relief for several years, the much better, you know, larger car tab relief, but it just hasn't happened. And I don't think that the makeup of what we're seeing coming out as far as legislative races suggests that it would happen moving forward either. So there could be frustration there. Could be an issue. In the 10th Congressional District, Marilyn Strickland is looking like the winner, and she appears to be making history, becoming the first Black person Washington has ever elected to Congress.
My African-American heritage and my Korean-American heritage, I believe, just brings a different life experience and lens to the table. It feels good, but more than anything, it feels good to have the privilege of representing the 10th District.
Now, Strickland wants to focus on job creation, climate change, and other issues, but she says the first priority is dealing with the damage of the pandemic.
How can we work on making sure that we're providing relief and getting cash into the hands of the people who really need it? And then on top of that, coming up with a, you know, a national strategy to address this pandemic.
And otherwise, the state races, it looks like we have in Snohomish County a couple of state races where Republicans were losing or kind of not, didn't do well, were trailing coming out of the election night numbers, have made up some ground. So a couple of important races to watch there that could have significant impact on whether the Democrats pick up another seat in the Senate and the House. Whatcom County Democrats are holding off in a couple of House races that were open seats, so they appear still poised to pick those up. Those are some big ones to watch.
All right, it's Hannah Scott. Hannah, thanks very much.
You bet.
Your Daily Dose of Kindness is brought to you by Mike Novak and ListWithNovak.com. Two sisters from Ireland are changing people's perceptions of disabilities, one wheelchair design at a time. And CBS's Caitlin O'Kane with The Uplift has the story.
Izzy Keene was born with spina bifida. She and her sister, Alva, always loved to play dress-up and used to decorate her wheelchair for birthdays and holidays.
Any kind of special occasion, we kind of have a theme for her wheelchair. And it really just changed how people interact with Izzy. Rather than her wheelchair being something that people, you know, might be nervous of how to approach it or should they mention it, it immediately turns the wheelchair into a friendly object that people could talk about and can ask her about. And that's always been something that she's really wanted.
Alva was an art student at the National College of Art and Design. One year, she got to do a project on anything she wanted. So, she created artful wheels for her sister's wheelchair.
I created a range of customizable wheel covers for her chair so that she can match her chair to her outfit and transform her wheelchair into a fashion statement.
The sisters put photos of the designer wheels online, and that's when the project started snowballing.
It just went totally viral, and we started getting messages from artists and designers from all over the world who wanted to create wheels for our project.
Alva started enlisting more artists and making more wheels for Izzy and her friends. Eventually, she created a company, Izzy Wheels. Now, the company enlists about 20 artists a year to create unique designs and sells them worldwide. Izzy Wheels even partnered with Barbie to create a line of wheelchair covers for dolls and kids.
And that's something that Izzy never had growing up, was a toy that she felt represented her. And the sooner we can educate kids about disabilities, just the more normal it becomes, and it becomes less intimidating. And if you can see the wheelchair as something fun and something cool from when you're young, I mean, I think people just grow up a lot more open-minded.
Caitlin O'Kane for The Uplift.
And if you want to see some of the designs, they're really impressive. You can go to the website, izzywheels.com.
I'm looking at them. So they're, yeah, they're wheel covers, and these are all one of a kind?
Yeah, it sounds like that. And it sounds like, too, Mattel may have picked up on a few of the designs, too, for some of their Barbies are in wheelchairs. Yeah.
And they cost about 139 euros each. Now from the G and Ursula Show, weekdays 9 to noon here on Cairo Radio, G Scott. G, we have 253 electoral votes for Joe Biden, 214 for Donald Trump. New results are being released in Georgia right now. Still 18,000 votes separate the two, with Trump still ahead in Georgia. Anyway, are you feeling more hopeful or less hopeful since you're rooting for Biden, obviously, since yesterday?
I'm more hopeful about going forward as a country and as a person. That's what I'm more hopeful about. As they figure out who's going to win the election, I think that no matter what happens, I think we can all agree that our country right now is in shambles. I think there has been an attack on our democracy. I believe that it is embarrassing that the current president of the United States is saying, count the votes in one state and stop counting the votes in another state. He continues to get flagged on Twitter. He's been flagged more times on Twitter in the last 2 days than I've been flagged. I've never been flagged in 10 years on Twitter. So that is just letting you know exactly. Well, in fact, they didn't start flagging tweets until the last year anyways. Yeah. But my point is this. Oftentimes, I think we sit and we try to make politicians or government fix things. Yes, they are important. And yes, they make laws and they put language into laws that kind of help or oppress, whatever the case might be. However, my focus lately and the reason for my hope, Dave, and is has been what I want to do in my own community, right? Like what can we do in our own community for our neighbor, help, assistance? You start 22 million jobs have been lost since this pandemic. Last week, 751,000 unemployment claims happened. There are people across the country that are struggling. There are people that have been sick with this pandemic, with this COVID. And there's also been people that have lost loved ones. And so we are it's a time that people are hurting. So sometimes you can choose hope, and that's where I'm at with things.
Do you allow yourself, though, to play out to January when, you know, if predictions are right and Biden takes the presidency? You know, I imagine a scene where President Trump is not alongside him flying off in Marine One, that we see a situation where there isn't a polite transfer of power. I don't know if I want to say peaceful. What exactly does that mean, peaceful? Does it mean arguing? Does it mean fighting? But
I'm nervous, right? Like, I mean, yeah. I'm seeing how the president is on Twitter. I can only imagine if he does, it confirms that he did lose, what's going to happen between now and January 21st or whatever the date is. So
Dave, because I know you've been watching that too, the peaceful transfer of power. Do you play out scenarios in your mind about that?
I do, but I don't see even Donald Trump trying to change that tradition. Why would you want to go down in history as the one guy who stayed and sulked in his corner while the next president took over? It just,
I guess, because enough people believe him that it's a fraudulent election. I mean, wouldn't that show that he means what he says by not appearing next to Joe Biden?
I suppose.
I've watched way too much TV, huh?
I mean, if he did that and it led to some sort of violence, though, would you want to be remembered for that as the one guy who started a civil war? That doesn't make sense.
I mean, just less than an hour ago, his tweet says any vote that came in after Election Day will not be counted. That's false, especially here locally in the state of Washington. You guys know here in the state, I think the votes are counted up to 20 days after the election. You can't do that.
As Glenda the Good Witch said, you have no power here. He can't tell the states what to do.
Well, I know he can't tell the states what to do, but the people, this is the part where, Dave, when the people read that and hear that, they go with that, right? And so then now we have a part of our country that actually believes those things. Hey, you're not allowed to, there's not allowed to any vote to be counted after Election Day. Well, yeah, there is. So, but right, I well, do, but I choose I, hope, though, Dave. Let's go back to that.
I don't think people are that dumb. I don't think so. But we'll see, won't we? We'll learn who's right soon enough.
Yes, sir. G joins Ursula at 9 o'clock right here on Cairo Radio. You can ring my bell. Ring the bell. This is Seattle's Morning News. Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien, Chris Sullivan. I think we could all just use something relaxing. And what better way to relax than to take out the paints and the brushes and paint some kind of romantic landscape? Here's Rachel Bell.
But first, here's Bob Ross.
Hello, I'm Bob Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to the 29th Joy of Painting series. So I tell you what, let's get started. Let's start with a little 2-inch brush and a touch of the alizarin crimson. And we just load a little bit right into the bristles. Pull a little paint out.
Are you soothed just hearing this?
Already, yes.
I'm soothed. There is a new exhibit. Unfortunately, it is in Indiana. Unfortunately for us, it's called the Bob Ross Experience, and it's a $1.2 million permanent exhibit and painting workshop series that they installed at a museum called the Miniaturista. Basically, a Bob Ross kind of memorial. They have set up his old studio just the way that it was. They set up the old TV station where he used to record, and it's a very, very interactive experience that you can come and you can touch all kinds of things. You can try on not his actual shirts, but they have all of these blue button-up vintage JCPenney shirts, just like the ones Bob Ross wore, that you can put on. You can actually flip through a stack of his real fan mail. And best of all, you can take a painting class and attempt to paint Gray Mountain, one of his famous landscapes, in a master class that is led by a certified Bob Ross painting instructor.
Wow.
And in this article I read, there are at least 5,000 instructors certified in the country. They have to do a 3-week training course at the Bob Ross Art Workshop and Gallery in Florida. And I saw this story and I thought, this is perfect for this week because so many people are stressed out by the election. And I know that Bob Ross is a calming presence that a lot of people do turn to when they're feeling stressed. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine who works for one of the big companies in town said that their boss spent, they gave them an hour this week that everyone got to log on to Zoom and watch Bob Ross, and they mailed everybody some painting supplies and they got to do some Bob Ross painting together.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever tried painting?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was more of an artist. I do watercolors at home, but I don't do Bob Ross style landscapes.
I should be a painter because my dad, whose name was also Ross, was a painter. He didn't make his living that way. He made his living as a commercial artist. But we, the family, has hundreds of his. I have one right here, as a matter of fact, called Boat by a Dock, which was painted up at our summer place. And he would take.
I mean,
I
what could that painting be of? Please
what could
tell
it be
us.
Of? That's right. It was very cleverly named.
Yeah.
Strangely, my dad would never sign his paintings. But anyway, he would take me out on sketching trips as a kid because we lived in upstate New York, and there were all these old logging roads, strangely enough, with abandoned farmhouses along them. And but I was terrified. We would go out to the woods in this little car,
aww,
and we'd be there for hours, and so I wasn't much of a companion. But the thing is, I know Bob Ross's philosophy is there are no mistakes, only happy accidents, but I could never get past the mistakes I made.
Well, it's interesting. I did a story years ago where I interviewed this woman who teaches finger painting classes to adults, and she did a bunch of research, and she said, if you ask a kindergarten class, who in here is an artist? Every single kid in that class will raise their hand.
Good for them.
And it goes down and down and down as you get older. You know, by the time you get to high school, maybe 3 kids in a class will raise their hands, and you get to adults, maybe nobody, because the older you get, the more that the term artist takes on weight. You think, oh, I have to be really good to say I'm an artist. And she was saying, you know, if you just practiced, you know, you would be good, but also you can be an artist. You don't have to be the best painter. You should just enjoy it, you know, enjoy the craft of it, kind of like the journey versus the destination.
But just talking about this has relaxed me.
Your voice is, I think, just as relaxing as Bob Ross's. You just need to have some of that brush on canvas, you know, kind of ASMR sound to really soothe us.
Do you really think so?
Yeah.
Rachel Bell. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Bum, bum, bum. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News.
You can hear us live every morning on 97.3 FM or subscribe to this podcast and you'll never miss the show.